भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायण नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं सरस्वतीं ततो जयामुदीरये। I'm very happy to see you here today. Gathered here today from different places around the world at the footsteps of Govardhan. And we will continue the discussion of Madhurya Kundalini. I hope I can talk about the third and fourth chapters of the Madhurya Kundalini, maybe even the fifth, if time will allow. And before beginning these lectures, I would like to say that it's a great luck that we can meet here and think and analyze how our bhakti is developing, how the seed is growing that was planted in our heart, and try to understand what we are doing wrong. Vatsala Prabhu came to me yesterday and said, as usual, we will start with Lord Narayana, right? First we'll talk about creation. And yes, he was right. The meaning of his... So what he was trying to say, that he will be repeating what I said last time anyway, but and I shouldn't do it, but I will do it anyway, a little, because we cannot do without Lord Narayana. So we'll start from him. And from the definition of Shastriya Shraddha. This will be the same material that I gave last. So the reason why I decided to start from this will be understood during the lecture. Of course, I could have opened the third chapter of the Madhurya Kadambini and start explaining Narasimhadeva, which is probably the most important stage of spiritual development, at least the stage where a lot of is dependent on us, on the correctness of our behavior. But I wanted to start with faith. I'm talking about faith. I hope I will not repeat the same things Vatsala Prabhu said. And I want to try to naturally tomorrow bring the discussion to the new material. So let's read the Mangalacharana. Ranjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Visham Stavitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamaya Anadiswa Padantika Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Pada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Shri Shri Rupam Savrajakam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Vaidana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Viva Sri Radha Krishna Padma Sahagana Valita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagat Pate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapa Kancha Gaurangi Radhe Vinda Maneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakapa Karunyascha Kripa Sindhu Vya Eva Cha Vajudam Pavanivyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasani Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Ajanaman Pujropana Kavada Sankirtanaya Sankaro Kamalaya Daksha Vishwambaro Vijavaro Yogadharma Pavu Vande Jagat Priyakaro Karuna Avatar Yantah Pradishya Mama Vachan Mam Prasuttam Sanjeevara Ratira Shaktidara Svadam Anyamsya Hasta Charana Shravana Bhavai Ranam Bhavam 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 Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. So the reason that I decided to start from the very beginning is from faith, because faith is the fundament of our spiritual life. We all know this this quote, Bhakti Lata Bija. And this seed of Bhakti Lata is not just faith. Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī explains that this seed of Bhakti Lata, or the sprout of devotional service, that should eventually bring us to the spiritual world and give us these amazing fruits and flowers of bhava and fruits of prema. The seed is actually shraddha with some little taste. It's a small piece. Actually, it's the same prema, but an embryo. Actually, this development of this shraddha should eventually bring us to prema. And like a huge banyan tree exists in this small seed of banyan, the same way all the prema is in the seed of faith. And the question, the very important question is, or actually a very important subject matter, is what kind of seed do we have? Because very often we give water to the seed that we have inside, and eventually you get, you know, a big useless plant. Like something else grows, not what you really want to grow. And why something else grows? Because the seed was wrong. And that will be the first exercise I will give you for some reflection on your homework, is to analyze our faith according to the criteria I will give during this lecture. And at the same time, while analyzing our faith, we should write down some doubts that we have.
Doubts
in the theory, in the Sambandha Gyana. Doubts in our theology, doubts in the practice that we might have for one or for some reason, doubts in our goal, whether I want it or don't want it, whether I need it, do I really want to become crazy for God and just and roll around in the ground with foam coming out of my mouth or not. It's all important thing that we should think about thoroughly. And this will be the first homework, analysis of the seed that I have in my heart. So that when we water the seed with the water of Shravanam and Kirtanam, we eventually get the plant that we want. That there will be that the right plant will grow. Because unfortunately, I saw people that after many years of watering some kind of seed they had, got some different result, not the one that we need. And they were very disappointed. They were saying, oh, I just wasted so much time, I shouldn't have been doing it. Do I really even need this fruit? They said, why were I doing this? What did I get as a result? And it's a fact, they didn't get anything. This useless plant that was growing in their heart just brought bitter fruits. So it's very important to understand what's in our heart. What is in my heart now? What am I trying to water? And to thoroughly understand it for myself while it's not too late. It's better to run if you run away now than run away in 20 years when there will be when it will be too late for you to run anyway because your knees won't be working anymore. So my first question to you, what is faith? What is faith? What is Shraddha? Faith in what? Faith in Shastras, that was the wrong answer I was expecting to get from you. I was expecting this wrong answer. It's not exactly the right answer. I mean, I cannot say it's wrong, but it's not exactly right. It's not an exact answer. Very often people think, I have faith in Shastras, I believe in Ayurveda. Anyone believes in Ayurveda? The followers of Oleg Gennadievich Tursunov. Anyone? I believe in astrology. That's Shastras, right? It's Shastras. Sometimes a person might think that this faith in Shastras is enough. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives a very interesting comment. He says some people that know the conclusion of the Shastras well, they claim that Shastra means faith in the Vedas and in the words of Sri Guru. And then he says, and you cannot say that it's not that it's wrong, but it's not an exact answer. It's not clear. Actually, the real definition of faith is a bit different. And today, really, we will try to understand that definition that is given in our Sampradaya. So the first thing we should remember is that Shraddha is not faith in the Shastra. It's faith in the essence of the Shastra. Shastrartha Vishvas. And it's not even faith, but rather trust. The difference of the faith from trust in Russian is very simple. Faith might mean just some mental state. Why believe? But trust means also what? Trust means action. Trust means I start to act according to what I trust. That's why Shastra Artha Vishvas means trusting the essence of the Shastra, which requires from me specific way of acting. This magical point of of this burst of faith in our heart always comes with the feeling that I have to change something. Real faith always means that I have this feeling in my heart, I cannot live like I lived before. I have to change something in my life. Something is wrong now in my life. And in essence, and what is the essence of the shastra? What is this trust or faith that I have to, for the essence of the shastras? What do I need to believe? Who can in one verse say the essence of all the shastras?
Sarvasya chitam kriya sani vishtam atak smrtir gyanam apoha nam se vidaischa sarvar aham eva
vidaischa sarvar Krishna smysl tekh vet sovshenno verno
Krishna is the essence of all Vedas, right? That's right.
No, but это не совсем, а всё-таки, а что это значит?
But what does it mean?
Если переводить это практическое измерение, что я должен делать?
If you bring this to the practical plane, to the practical level, it means Manmanabhava Bhakto, that is the essence of all the shastras. All the same thing, Sarvadharmam Pantyajam, Amkam Sharanam Raja. That is the essence of all the shastras. And that's what we should have faith in. That if I leave everything else, if I leave all the other paths and just find shelter in Krishna, I will not lose anything. And Manmana, what does it mean? It means I think about Krishna, I become his devotees, I pay obeisances to him. That's why a very important definition that Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives from Amnaya Sutra, the 57th sutra of the second part of Amnaya Sutra.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur,
Amnaya Sutra means the sutra that logically explains the essence of the shastra. Second part, 57 verses.
Anyopaya Varjam Bhakti Unmukhi Chitta Vritti Vishesha. Shraddha tu anya upaya.
Very simple.
Shraddha tu, no shraddha.
But shraddha.
Или противопоставительный союз tu, no. No shraddha, yes. Anya upaya varja.
But shraddha is anya upaya varja means
upaya shraddha.
Varja. Upaya, what does upaya mean? Methods.
Способ.
Methods.
Yesterday
I said that the Vedic culture is characterized by this point, that the Vedic culture developed infinite variety of different upayas and methods, unlike the Western culture or Western spiritual culture, where there is more. More accent given to the theory, not to the practice. But in the Eastern culture, there is much more accent given to the methods. That's why the Western culture, the spiritual culture. Criticizes the Eastern culture. Criticizes it because they say the Vedas gives too much emphasis on the attempts of a person to do his own practice, while Western philosophy means I just try to have the right faith or to have the right philosophy. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says we reject all other upayas.
Chitta means
heart.
Chitta vritti
means some state of heart. What is shraddha? Shraddha means some state of heart where I throw all other passes away.
And
I have this striving to receive, to get bhakti, only bhakti, nothing else. So is it clear what Shraddha is? Shraddha means that I do not try to use any other methods. And I have this tendency in my heart to only act according to bhakti. And this understanding that I will not get any benefit from using other methods, or the benefit that I want to receive, I cannot get it through karma, jnana, yoga. So the most usual mix of faith that devotees have is faith in astrology. Do you believe in astrology? Do you believe in stones? Yes, we believe in stones. Different mantra, astrology. Yes, we have faith in it.
And etc. So
we have to try to analyze how much do I have this Sarva Dharma Prakriti, or Anya Upaya Vardhana. And according Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he gives purport to this sutra, he gives the words from Chaitanya Charitamrita. It is said here that also Krishna is Purva Adhya. Also Krishna said before in the Bhagavad Gita. What did he say in the Bhagavad Gita? What Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita? Karma. Should we do karma? Does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita we should do karma? Yes. Yoga, should we do yoga? Yes, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita we should do yoga. Gyan. Does Krishna talk about Gyan in Bhagavad Gita? Yes. And people read the Bhagavad Gita and they hear these things. Purva Agya Veda Karma. Dharma Yoga Gyan. This is all the Veda that Veda has. Karma, Dharma, Yoga and Gyan. But all of this is actually dismissed by his last order, very strong order, Sarva Dharma Paritecha Shatam Vracha. Very often people do not understand this. Sometimes I'm telling this story when I met the ambassador of India. And the ambassador of India was trying to prove to me that the meaning of the Bhagavad Gita is that we should fight for our country. And I said, yes, it's nice. Krishna says we should fight, but he says in the end, Sarva Dharma Pratyaja. And this ambassador told me, where does he say that? People read the Bhagavad Gita, but they miss the essence. They miss the essence. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he emphasizes this point. In the next verse, he quotes from Chaitanya Charitamrita, says, if a person has faith, yadi means if, shraddha yadi hai, if a person has faith, and faith means faith in this order. And he starts worshipping Krishna and leaves all other things. And that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur
sa-cha-sharanapati-lakshana.
That's why shraddha means sharanapati. Shraddha always means this state of surrendering, where I do not try to find shelter in anything else, where I do not try to find my protection in something else, when I only try to get shelter from Krishna, to find shelter in Krishna. And eventually, what is the main sign of Sharanagati? How can a person, by judging his internal state, understand if he has Sharanagati or not? Humility is actually a person not always knows if he has humility or not. But a person always knows if he has fear in his heart or not.
Sharanagati,
person that got that accepted shelter in Krishna, who is freed from fear for his future. Because a person understands Krishna always takes care of me. Not only of me, that he takes care of millions of living entities. I do not have to worry too much about myself. I need to do something for him. And that's some kind of, that's shraddha. This feeling, I remember very clearly when I had this feeling. This feeling that I cannot keep living like this, that I have to change something, appeared twice in my life. One time when I read for the first time the Evangel, how do you say? His preaching of Jesus from the mountain, I don't know the name.
Sermon on the Mount.
Yes, Sermon from the Mountain. When I read it, I had very deep impression in my heart. What am I doing? How can I live? But then, in the second time when I read the Bhagavad Gita, so for the first time when I read this Sermon from the Mountain, I understood I have to change something, but I didn't understand what, so I didn't change anything. But when I read the Bhagavad Gita, and there were devotees next to me, then I understood what I need to change. So I changed it, and that's why I'm sitting here today. So in other words, this impulse that I have to change something in my life, I need to act differently according to the Shastras, that is the seed of Shraddha. But we will not limit ourselves to this. We will analyze it onward. So that we can understand how pure is the seed of Shraddha in my heart. How right. Because everyone has some Shraddha. I'm sure that everyone who are here have some kind of Shraddha. But we have to ask the question, if I have strong faith, then what am I wasting my time? Last time when we gathered with some of you in Puri, someone is already sleeping there. When we gathered together in Puri, I gave this table that Roshana Prabhu was mentioning yesterday, because we can see according to what I waste my time on or invest my time in, I can understand what kind of Shraddha I have. If I chant my rounds only while I'm driving, and I do not have any other time to chant my rounds, that means, what does it mean? It means I do not have strong faith in the Holy Name. If the Holy Name is the most important thing, and I do not have time, and I do not give time to chanting, but I do find so many time to so many other things, to look at the news, you know, I do not read the news while I'm driving, right? So I find time for so many other important things, but for the mantra I find time only when I'm at the wheel. What does it mean? It means I do not have any faith. And in essence, it's enough just to take 1 week and punctually write down everything we use our time for, and at the end of this week we will understand what we have faith in. So we have faith in prasadam, right? So we dedicate time for many different things. I need to understand how much time we dedicate to devotional service, and then we'll be able to see how pure our faith is. If 100% of our time is invested in pure devotional service, if there will be 95% of the time dedicated to other things, well, okay, we have to start from something. But what I'm trying to say is that looking back and I And I'm trying to practice devotional service for the past 36 years. And looking back, I'm thinking, oh God, how much time I wasted? What have I been doing all this time? If I would start over again. But that never happens. I was acting according to the small shraddha I had. And when the shraddha will become stronger, that will mean I will waste less time on useless things. And the next thing I want to tell you is the detailed description of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and what is shraddha. But now, that I will do that in the end. But first, I want to discuss in more detail what is the essence of the of all the scriptures. Because what we did now, when we said the essence is Sarva Dharma Pritya Jama Kamsharva Dharma Jama, it's actually the conclusion of the essence. The scriptures bring us to this conclusion in a very logical manner. So I wanted us to come to this conclusion that we will re-establish our devotion to the Shastra, or to the scripture. I did this exercise in Mayapur when I was telling the devotees about the levels of devotional service. And it was very interesting for the devotees to hear about the five categories. And now Lord Narayana will appear in this description, in this discussion. So does Lord Narayana exist? Can we live without him? It's not a very simple question. If it would be a very simple question, obvious question, then most people would not be doing what they're doing. I had an interesting experience not long ago. We were walking around Govardhan. When we were coming to the city, Govardhan, we sat down to rest, and next to us there was a pair of Indians. So the husband and wife. And the husband just fell asleep, very tired. And the wife was looking at us with great interest. And then she approached us and started talking. She's asking, why are you doing this? Do you really believe in what you're doing? Do you really believe that? Can you prove why? And to my shame, I didn't find an answer. First of all, because I didn't have enough words in Hindi. But at some point, I couldn't answer her direct question. Why are we walking around Govardhan? What will be the result of this? So, sometimes we are doing something and do not understand why exactly are we doing it. So, by starting, I wanted to start with Lord Narayana, or even before Lord Narayana. I wanted to describe the logic of the Shastras. We all know that Shastra is dealing with five categories. What five categories? Ishvara is in the end. Ishvara is in the end. Shastra 4 first describes what? What do we see first? Prakriti. Shastra first of all describes material nature. And what do we need to understand, first of all, about the material nature? Let's put aside all our knowledge of Shastra. What is the material nature? What is the material world? The material energy, what is it created for? If we are materialists, Does this question matter to them? What is the material energy created for? No, it doesn't concern them. But on the other hand, it doesn't matter have any sense in itself. Is it complete in itself in some way?
This
beautiful planet would exist by itself, but people would not be here. Would it be useful? This is a very important point. One way or another, there is a living entity and there is matter. And the matter is meant for the living entities. Right?
Shastra, the Shastra starts, begins
from the interaction of the living entity with matter, and that matter by itself is not full itself. That the matter has meaning when the living entity begins to use this matter. Imagine there is an island with a lot of treasures, but there is no one there. Would that have any meaning? So now humans are saying that there are so many planets floating around, and all these planets are empty. Did you ever feel this this feeling of uselessness of this universe, if there are so many empty planets? Actually, the Vedas say everywhere there are planets, and everywhere there is matter, and everywhere there are living entities. Because this is the essence of matter, this is the usefulness of matter. So just imagine how useless it would be, and this planet would be so useless if we wouldn't be here. What would be the sense of all this if we wouldn't be here? So the existence of matter, a person feels inside that the existence of matter is actually has any sense in it because of the existence of living entity. And what is the difference between the living entity and matter? What is the problem of the living entity living in this kingdom of matter? That matter does what? Changes all the time. Matter is destructive or changes all the time. Forms of matter changes all the time. But the living entity? Not changing. That is the essence. Why is the living entity eternal? Why can we claim the living entity is eternal? See all the changes, observe all the changes. So this fact means that the living entity isn't changing itself. Can a changing living entity see, observe changes? No. If I'm changing myself, I cannot see the changes. Ajahn Krishna Prabhu sent me an article about artificial intelligence. Another achievement on the frontier of creating artificial intelligence. Before computers could defeat only chess players, now they learned to defeat Go players. Those who do not know, it's a Chinese game. When you need to have very powerful intuition. And before, those who were against the ability, those who are claiming that artificial intelligence is impossible, they were saying that computers will never defeat Go players. But now computers defeated Go players. But still, what actually machines will not be able to do? Feeling? No. No, that's not a problem. We can connect senses to them. What a machine will never have. consciousness of its own self, disposition of observer. It will never be able to understand the essence of what's happening. It's still a stupid program, even if it's very complicated. So the living entity is the observer. The living entity. This passive me is the most important part of the creation, much more important than all this huge kingdom of active material energy that is actually blind in essence. There will never be a meaning to anything while the living entity will not be there. So when the living entity acts with matter, interacts with matter, what happens? Karma is created, but what does karma mean? Who can give the definition of karma? Memory? Results? Someone said activity. No, it's not the right definition. Karma means acting with the feeling that I am acting. Karma means the activity of a living entity that goes with this feeling that I'm acting, I need the fruit. I'm acting to get the fruit. So the living entity has this understanding of meaning. Matter does not have this concept of meaning. It never will have. But the living entity has this sense of meaning. And when this living entity with this sense of meaning starts to act, what happens? Karma is created. So, what will happen with these fruits of karma, of activity? They will come back to me. Because I'm acting for that. The website where I answer questions, someone asked, what is karma? How does karma work? If I do something bad, will I necessarily get it back? So the right answer, no. Because if you do something bad without attachment to the result, then you will not get it back. You will not get the reaction. If you just do things with absolutely no attachment, if you will not have this feeling of goal behind it. We need to understand the logic of scripture. There is matter that doesn't have meaning. We have that hasn't the sense of meaning. We have the living entity that has the sense of meaning. And when the living entity, endued with the sense of meaning, starts to interact with matter, then karma is created. Now, how? So, what is karma? How does karma brings its fruits through time? Karma does not fructify immediately. Karma is realized or manifest through the energy of time. Oh, sorry, no, God is not in the picture yet. We still have. So, everyone that studies astrology knows this, that at some point, some fruit come to the person that he wanted. Some fruits that he wanted come to him. And all of this is manifested in time. So these are the four categories. So now, do we need God to explain this? No, Prakriti, Jiva, Karma. So why do we need God? Maybe these four categories fully describe the material world.
Да, так вот, почему Бог-то возникает? Бог возникает очень из простого понимания.
So actually God comes from the simple understanding that eventually someone has to take care of these fruits coming to us specifically. If God would not exist, if there would not be one force that rules or manages this entire mechanism, I could imagine that I'm doing something, but the fruits do not come back to me. For everything to work in a balanced manner, considering the many different consciousness that work here, that act here, there should be some one consciousness that takes care of the balance. So if many people are acting and everyone should get what he deserves, for that to happen, we need Ishvara. That's why Baladeva Vidyabhushana, when he describes these five categories, he doesn't say Krishna, he doesn't even say Vishnu. He says Ishvara. And we can understand eventually that those people reject God. Why do they reject God usually? Why do people reject God? Because they want to remain unpunished. Why do people reject the principle of God? Because they think I can do all these bad things, but everything, all of it will never return to me. That is the description of reality, these five categories that fully describe the entire reality, that fully describe the essence of what we are doing here. And in accordance to that, if a person understands this logic of Shastra, that there is the living entity that is entangled in matter and that will suffer due to its actions, then what is the logical next step of the Shastra? That there are two kinds of happiness in life. That is the next logical step in this discussion. Until now, is it all logical? Yes. It's all quite logical. So now there are two kinds of happiness. What two kinds of happiness? The first kind of happiness is material happiness that happens due to the interaction of senses with the object of the senses or of the living entity with matter. The second kind of happiness is what? The happiness that is natural for the soul itself. Where does Krishna talk about these two kinds of happiness? Where does Krishna talk about in the Bhagavad Gita? In the Bhagavad Gita, wonderful. That's A plus. The reasonable person is not attached to time and fruits. So Krishna says in this verse, is it the 21st and 22nd verses of the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, said that there is spiritual happiness that comes from inside, and there is the happiness that comes from the interaction of the spiritual, of the living entity with the object. So these things are very important to understand. He was just talking about the two kinds of happiness. So in other words, if there are two kinds of happiness that there are two categories of living entities strive to. So the next very important point is that in essence, for me, how to understand how should I live to be happy? Who wants to be happy? Raise your hand. Not everybody, huh? Everyone wants to be happy. How can I be happy? If God exists, and if I have the tendency to make mistakes, and if I'm always confusing material happiness with real happiness, and I'm always getting entangled in this, the problem of a person is that he gets some material happiness and never understands this point. What is the difference between a wise person and a regular and a normal person? That a wise person understands that any kind of suffering that he receives is a result of some enjoyment or happiness that he received before. It's actually the other side of the same happiness.
Krishna
talks about it. Buddha, or a reasonable person, is not entangled in all of this because he understands that it will never make him happy. Never. This point, this is a hard word, never. We need to understand this word very well if we believe in the Shastras, but we will never be able to be happy in the material world through material means, no matter how good we be. Does anyone believe in this? Maybe 5-6 people. If you believe in this, why aren't you always suffering? No, the next point is very important. We understood that there is no possibility to find happiness in the material world. But we want happiness. We want happiness. So how to find happiness? In the heart. How to find it in the heart? Did anyone look for it in the heart? So this is the most important point. That in essence, I need to understand very well that if I want happiness, I need to have faith in the words of God. If God exists and He cares for my happiness, He wants me to become happy, then I need to act like He wants me. Our life, right? No, he wants us to be happy. He knows how we can become happy. Doesn't he? No. All these rules, they are for us, for our own happiness. And in essence, Shastra exists for that. Also, the words of the Shastra is the words of God that knows what's good and bad for me. He tells me, live like this and you become happy. The human form of life is given to you to get rid of your eternal problem. And in accordance with that, Krishna eventually says, some people say, Krishna is egoistic. Because he says, think about me. Think about me. Why does he say that? Because he knows that's the only method for me, for us, to become happy. So in other words, the essence, that is all the entire logic of the Shastra. These five categories, which are needed for the full description of reality. If we miss one of these categories, we will never be able to explain all everything. The full explanation of reality exists only when we see these five categories, how they are connected among themselves, how they interact with each other. And then arises the point of the goal of human existence or happiness. The problem is that we naturally say that the material happiness is the same as real happiness, but Krishna says there is real happiness. And how to achieve it, Krishna says, that's why Shastra is given for. Material happiness is very obvious, but spiritual happiness is not so obvious. Does anyone know what is the definition of Shastra? I will give it later, but Agyata Gyapaka Shastra. What is Shastra? Shastra is what talks about things one cannot understand without Shastra. Something that is not obvious in a trivial way. Something that the truth that we cannot find in any other way except through Shastra. So Shastra is something that happens in our eyes to the things that we cannot understand any other way. There are two definitions of Shastra which we will discuss later, but now this definition means its revelation or ability to know something that we cannot find in any other way, and this is given for us to achieve happiness. And now I want to read a long thing paragraph from Chaitanya Shikshamrita. Are you too tired? Is your head still working? So listen, it's very interesting. Bhaktivinoda Thakura is describing, it's about one page. He describes what is faith. He says, in the end of this passage, he says, this is what called Shraddha or faith. First, life without morality is the life of an animal. So this is the life of an animal. Increases the level of my happiness through materialistic science and mechanics, or through intellectual power, is demonic life. Does anyone agree? And eventually, this development of science, although it seems it makes people happy, it actually develops what kind of qualities in a person? Demonic qualities. People become more and more demoniac. Eventually, this is very temporary happiness, very small happiness that scientific development gives. Of course, yes, it seems we are going in a nice way, developing nice. So now we agree with these things. So it means this is the definition of faith by Bhaktivinoda Thakura. So moral people are following some principles, controlling their mind and body, but actually, eventually, a life of just moral person. Because someone can say, okay, I should just be moral, I should just control my mind and body. Is this enough for us? What is the criteria of morality? Other people like it. Don't do to others what you don't want to be done to you. That is the golden rule of ethics. So what does Bhaktivinoda Thakura say next? He says that such a life of morality by itself is useless and doesn't bring any satisfaction to the soul. Also, a person thinks about his next life. Actually, in this case, he does not think about his next life. It's actually the life of a moral atheist. The life of a moral atheist does never actually bring satisfaction, because it's too small. Did any one of you was a moral atheist? Does a person become happy just by following the rules of morality? A little bit, but eventually still he's missing something. So the next level, he describes these five levels of consciousness. The first level of consciousness is moral the lowest level is no moral atheistic person which has no morality. The next level is atheistic person that has morality. The third level, if a person that is the next level of person that is moral and even worships God and thinking about his next life, he will not be able to be fully pure in his actions. If I'm following the rules of morality and believing faith for my own benefit, but I have faith in God out of fear. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that eventually the activity of such a person will never be absolutely pure. Such activity will never bring full satisfaction. Because the soul cannot be attached to this existing existing. It's like an intermediate stage, the moral theism. And the next level is impersonality, impersonalism. If I believe in some impersonal God, that also does not bring me full satisfaction. And only life in service is real life. Do you agree with that? It's logical, right? These five levels of consciousness, what is the first level? Immoral atheist. The second is moral atheist. The third is moral theist. The next is impersonalist. And the next is bhakta. Hare Krishna, are you with us? So, the Lord is everything. He is the creator of everything. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that the Supreme Lord is everything, He controls everything. And for my own benefit, I should achieve attachment to Him. And everything that brings me, and things are beneficial to me to the degree they help me develop attachment to Him. Moral taste and impersonalism. So now, why don't we eat chocolate? This is a very important question that will allow us to understand if we have faith or not. Why don't we eat chocolate and do many other things? Because this will be an impediment in our development, in our attachment to Krishna. This will help us develop attachment to what? To chocolate. But it will be an impediment in the development of our attachment to Krishna. So faith means I have very clear understanding of what is good and what is bad. So good is what helps me develop attachment to Krishna, and what is bad, bad is what disturbs me in achieving that. And that's Sharanagati. That's the beginning of faith. Everything that helps me develop attachment to Krishna. Attachment is good. And everything that impedes my developing of attachment to Krishna, that's bad. So, my independent attempts to receive knowledge are actually very very limited. I will never be able to satisfy Krishna just by trying to understand Him independently. So if I cannot understand God, achieve God by my own efforts, how can I achieve Him? Through devotion, through bhakti. So, selfless devotion is a must, is required. Because initially the soul is full of devotion to God, so this interaction of the soul with matter is degrading for the soul. If the soul is very attached to matter, if this intimate interaction of the soul with matter happens because of the naivety of the soul, because of the inexperience of the soul, it becomes entangled in this matter. And the reason for this misfortune is the is lack of respect to God. The reason that I interact too closely with this matter is my disrespect to God, my mistrust of God, my disrespect to Him. So the next element of faith is that the soul creates its own karma, or its own or like the atheists say, that a person is the creator of his own faith. And we fully agree with that. We can only wish them happiness. So the soul created the soul, and this world is real. It's real, but not eternal. This world is the jail for the soul, inexperienced and entangled souls. But at the same time, the God is very is very good. So God tries all the time to pull the soul out of this tormenting conditions. So the Lord wants the soul through its own effort. It will get some qualification so that he can give the soul the nectar of his own pastimes. That's a very important element of faith that Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about, that the Lord does not just give a person the opportunity to become free, but he doesn't do it passively. He teaches or inspires the person to act himself with his own effort, so that the person can qualify, can become qualified by himself and get access to the pastimes of the Lord. A lot depends on us in this equation, and it's a very important part of faith. We should act in the right way. Just a few more sentences, three or four sentences. If the Lord wants, He can liberate everyone. But that is His inconceivable lila. He wants the soul to strive for devotion itself. The Father can give all the richness to His Son unconditionally, but He feels much more pleasure if He makes His Son qualified. He allows His Son to first become qualified and then gives Him all this richness. And when the Son has the qualities that are required to use this richness in the right way. So, that is the manifestation of God's love. Why does God, some very often people ask, why does God create suffering in this world? Because it's His mercy to help us. Although it's very it might sound like a paradox, it's actually His method of manifesting His life, love to us, so that we can eventually understand that we need to develop some level of qualification. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that this is what's called Shraddha of faith. When the person has firm faith in the Lord and devotion, his faith, so when a person has full firm faith in God and in his own weakness, then these things I just mentioned will naturally manifest from his mouth. He will start talking about it, saying these things. So there is one more part I wanted to talk about today. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave you some kind of credo, like Christians have this credo or faith. Like, I have faith in this, this, and this. This is not, this is our credo, this is what we believe in. Our emblem of faith. So is it nice? Do we have nice faith? It seems that instead of increasing your faith, I fully ruined it. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that in the beginning the person has small faith, weak faith, and eventually a person should develop nishtha, come to the level of nishtha. And when we will during this seminar, we will try to understand what are the reasons that we do not have nishtha, we don't have unflinching faith yet.
But
I would like you to open your books, Madhurya Kadambini, because I will now read from it. Okay. Who doesn't have the book? If someone doesn't have the book,
122.
It's page 122. So this is some kind of conclusion. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur describes what the pointing out very bad mistakes in this translation. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains the essence of spiritual practice. He says that the essence of spiritual practice is to spiritualize our ego, that now I have material ego. And this material ego has two aspects. What two aspects of material ego? Me and mine. The aspect of me, the material ego, what does it mean? I am what? I am the body. I am this mind. And mine, what is mine? Everything that is connected. Jnana and Bhakti. When a person goes on the path of Jnana, what happens? What happens to his ego? It becomes nullified. The ego is just destroyed. That is page 122. So, someone should break the hands of the one that did this translation. Gurudev says there is a problem with the translation. He says it says that the devotee becomes free using jnana, becomes free from the ego. But no, it's the jnani becomes free through jnana, not devotees. So jnana destroys what? Jnana destroys. But on the path of bhakti, the ego is not nullified, it transforms. So material ego becomes spiritual ego. That is the next stage. While these two aspects of self-identification, while I think this is me and mine, and this is my wife, my home, my family, then the soul is under the ruling of the material energy. Servant of the Lord, I exist to serve the Lord. To the ocean of nice qualities and beauty. When such consciousness comes to the person, where the soul fully identifies his, where is the ahamkara becomes what? Aham becomes what? I'm a servant of the God, and mine is what? Mine. God and the devotees. service.
So this is
material ego. So material ego means I'm the lord of everything. I control everything, I explore it. While spiritual ego means I'm a servant. I serve the lord and his associates. And this stage is what? The first one is called material life, and the second is what?
Prema. Это према.
So this prema.
То есть иначе говоря, цель человеческих устремлений.
The goal
of удовлетворить свое я, и есть некий промежуточный процесс. Слушать.
To spiritualize myself, my ego. And there is the intermediate process. So the steps of developing prema is this. When the material aspect is too powerful, when devotee thinks, I don't want to stop enjoying in the material life, that doesn't disturb me in serving God. This is the first level. When someone thinks I can keep enjoying, that does not disturb my prema. We think like that sometimes. I don't want to get rid of enjoyment in the material world, but it's not an impediment to my service to the Lord. You can even make a table out of this. This table will have two columns. In the upper part it will say material ego and spiritual ego. That's the two columns. And from the left of this table there will be the levels of bhakti. Shraddha, Sadhusanga, Bhajana Kriya, Anartanivriti, Nishtha, etc. Because next Bhaktivinoda Thakur will explain this table. So what will happen? How gradually the spiritualization of the ego happens? He says, when the small piece of ego, seed of ego, comes to the heart of a person, and he starts thinking about serving the Lord, then his consciousness becomes a little spiritualized, and the jiva gets the adhikar to do devotional service. Ganda. In Sanskrit, this is called Ganda. Ganda means smell. In other words, when a person gets faith, he still has this fully manifested material ego. But what happens with his spiritual ego? There is some kind of smell of spiritual ego. Little smell of spirituality. Actually, faith is not spiritual. Like some people say that faith is what it begins and ends with. But no, actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, not faith. Vishwanathacharya Thakur says that faith is only the smell of spirituality. Then what happens? And this smell of spirituality gives us the opportunity to engage in bhakti, or gives us faith or trust that we should act in this manner. And he says, on the level of sadhusanga, the spiritualization becomes a bit deeper, a bit more concentrated. Also, the consciousness is still under the control of the material nature. Actually, on the level of sadhusanga, the consciousness is still, the material consciousness is still on the level of atyantika. Atyantika means infinite. On the level of sadhusanga, I'm fully identify myself with matter. Then the next level, Bhajana Kriya, Anishtita Bhajana Kriya, that begins, if we technically talk about it, then it starts from the level of getting initiation. Something very interesting starts. The person gets somewhere. Just little, little spiritual qualities. At the same time with that, his material qualities are still fully manifest. Can anyone confirm this from his own experience? Vishwanachakravarti Thakur, the word in Sanskrit is that he uses here, Ekadeshavartiki.
Ekadeshavartini
means a little bit in some one place there is spirituality. On the level of Shraddha there is only smell of spiritual. On the level of sadhusanga there is a more concentrated smell. On the level of bhajana kriya there is, you know, like small stains of spiritual qualities, but there is still purnam association, full association with material. I'm looking in the mirror and I see, oh, this is me. I have wrinkles on my face and gets me, and I become worried because of that. And then he says, on the level of nishta, after anarthanivritti is kind of intermediate process. So on the level of nishta, the spiritualization. He says that, again, there is a mistake in translation. It says that spiritualization becomes full. No, it's not become full. Bhavadesha Vaitini means a person has several, stains, I don't know the word, like several places where where spirituality is manifested. He has quite powerful spirituality, but the effect of material qualities is prayaki, is almost full. Even on the level of nishta, and the person already has spirituality, but the material effect is still very powerful. It's prayaki, almost full. What I'm trying to say is that we should be very sober about how our spiritual development happens, and not to imagine ourselves achieving higher level than we are. Not trying to do some unrealistic things for us. Vishwanachakravarti Thakur, he paints a very realistic picture. Even on the level of nishta, the material ingredient is still has more weight than the spiritual. The first time the balance goes to the level, to the side of spirituality, is on the level of ruchi. On the level of ruchi, the consciousness is prayaki, or almost fully spiritual. And the aspects of material consciousness, ekadashavartini. It is just little aspects somewhere of material me and mine. This is to show how tough is our false ego. Only on the level of ruchi there is a bit of the spiritual things overweigh the material ones. On the level of asakti, then the spiritual things are purna, and the material things are only ganda. They're only smell of matter. But there is still smell, even on the level of shakti. On the level of bhava, he says, the spiritual nature receives atyantiki, or absolute development. The person is absolutely spiritual. And there is only abhas of material things. It's not clear how the translator took the next senses, the sentence. It doesn't exist in Sanskrit. So there is some purport of the translator. But the next level, on the level of prema, the spiritual aspect. I mean, Atyantika means infinite. Is there anything more than infinite? He says, Paramatyantiki, or very infinite. Supremely infinite. Means absolutely infinite. And only on the level of prema, the material contamination disappears without any sign.
And
so that we can understand the full picture of devotional of spiritual development. In the beginning level, a person is engaged in bhajana. Because a person mainly has material consciousness, his meditation on the Lord is very short. Sometimes just a small thought about God comes. Just a spark of thinking about God, and it's mixed with material thoughts and things. Sometimes just we remember, you know, just a little bit when we chant our name. Mostly it's mixed with material things and thoughts. On the level of nishtha, the meditation on the Lord is rarely disturbed by material thoughts. So what we will try to understand is what stops our meditation on the Lord, and how to get rid of these things. That is the essence of anartha nivritti. And when a person comes to the level of nishtha, he can think about God all the time. And sometimes he has this shadow of material thoughts. On the level of ruchi, the meditation becomes constant and free from material things. On the level of asakti, on the level of bhava, a person can always see the form of the Lord in the heart. I have this experience of I was associating with a Vaishnava of a very high level who chants 4 or 5 lakhs every day, almost doesn't sleep. And I asked him, I want to hear how you chant our name. He says, yeah, sure. I'd be happy. He took his beads. He said, Hare Krishna, and started to cry. I didn't hear anything else. There were just tears coming from his eyes. And eventually, I said, thank you, and went away. I don't know how he can chant 5 lakhs like this. But the essence is that on the level of bhava, just the moment a devotee starts to meditate on the Lord, immediately he sees his form in his heart and amazing feelings manifest in his heart. And while achieving prema, a devotee can not only see the Lord, but also come interact with him directly. Let this cloud of mercy give rain of the sweetness of the message of Lord Chaitanya. So I have more material, what we will study tomorrow. This will finish the subject matter of faith. So I mentioned four or five important aspects of faith. Mainly we did everything I wanted to discuss. So I want to tell you today that when a person has true faith, he is fully concentrated on the practice of bhakti. He does not become disturbed by anything else. Practice brings fruits very fast. If his faith is weak, if his faith is mixed with other things, then he will also receive mixed fruits. His progress will be limited.
And
that's how I try to describe the logic of the Shastra. This art So the person should fully understand the full building of the Shastra. These five categories which reality is made from. And there is no other categories. If we want to describe the entire reality, we can do it with these five categories that eventually brings us to the understanding that we must surrender to Krishna. We have to accept his will in our life. Accepting his rule as the rule of our life. And this is what faith means. If we have this faith, if this faith is strong, the person does not waste his time on anything else. He does. He tries to use all his effort to develop bhakti, to study and understand this process of bhakti. So the homework I already said, first of all, try to analyze what you're using your time for, how much time you use for devotional service, and try to understand. You should write down the doubts you have, analyze your faith, try to see the logic of the Shastra that brings us to surrendering to the Lord. And then it will be clearer for us what we need to do to make our practice stronger. And by the end of the retreat, we will all come to the level of Nishtha. That's very real. We can do that. That's it. Thank you very much. Arrivo! Why do, there is a question, why do devotees on the level of Bhava cry when they think about Krishna? But devotees on the level of Prema Bhakti, in the spiritual world, they do not cry. They do not cry anymore. I will tell a story. One time Krishna was alone with Srimati Radharani. Small pearls, they started falling down. And at this moment, at the same time, Bhava came to her heart. She didn't want. She did not want Krishna to see her tears and understand why she is crying. She looked at him angrily and said, "Oh, your cows made dust again, raised the dust again that made my eyes full of tears." This is why devotees do not cry in the spiritual world. They don't want Krishna to understand that they cry for him. That's it. Thank you very much.
Jai!
Jai!